This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hour number two of The Drive on a Thursday afternoon in Kansas City with Kramer and BK, Sports Machine on the mic. What was today's pop quiz, Kramer? What was the pop quiz?
Today's pop quiz was Moana. It debuted on this day back in 2016. You a big fan of Moana?
Didn't make my top 10 Disney movies list yesterday. If you missed that, Lion King, Toy Story, Mighty Ducks, Beauty and the Beast, Toy Story 3, Fantasia, Finding Nemo, Zootopia, Pinocchio, and Aladdin, rounding out my top 10 favorite Disney movies. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will step inside the mind of the machine, but right now, let's do a little cover two.
The biggest stories from the NFL and college football coming out of the weekend. It's time for cover two on The Drive.
Let's start with this one. In the NFL, Colin Kaepernick is allegedly going to have a workout on Sunday, but Adam Schefter said on ESPN earlier today, he's not 100% sure that this is even going to happen. Here's Adam Schefter. We'll get to that audio coming up here in just a little bit. I was expecting that they would do a better job with this, Sean, because of all things to mess up, you were the ones that publicized this. You're the ones that are putting the workout together. You were the ones that decided on the date. The NFL made it very clear that they wanted this to happen. And for whatever reason, they have completely fumbled the ball. Sean, the NFL is great at so many different things. Like, for instance, the fact that we all love football. That's the first thing that they're very good at. They seem to get these types of things wrong every single time. And they did it once again with this Colin Kaepernick
story. I don't know how unintentional that was. I think that part of what the NFL is doing is they realize that the relationship between them and Colin Kaepernick has, I don't want to say that it's been bad, but it's definitely had a lot more legs than they thought that it was going to. I mean, there's no way that the NFL thought that when he took a stand a couple of years ago that we would still be having the same conversation. Where are we now? 3+ years later. I think they're doing a bit of a disservice to Colin Kaepernick, though, if they really want to give him the national stage that they're pretending to give him. If they want to do that, then they'd make it in the middle of the week. They'd make it in the middle of the day. They'd make it in the middle of the country where everybody could get to it. Instead, they're putting it in Atlanta on a Saturday afternoon when a lot of the GMs and executives that might actually want to come and see him are going to be in other places like, oh, I don't know, watching other football games. So I'm not sure that the NFL didn't mean to do this to Colin Kaepernick. I think they know what they're doing.
I disagree in that it almost feels like this thing was just slapped together. Like it almost felt like, and I heard the morning show say this earlier today, it almost feels like they were like, oh crap, Colin Kaepernick, that we were supposed to give him a workout this year. Man, it's week 10. Like, is somebody going to throw this thing together? Get an intern on that. We need an intern to get on this ASAP. And now Hugh Jackson is apparently leading the workout on Saturday. Jill Philbin's going to be involved, apparently. Like, it seems so simple. It seems like something that could have been very easy to put together. You get Colin Kaepernick, you have him do a workout on a Tuesday because that's when all of these teams put their workouts together, and you have everybody go down there and you say every team needs to have one representative down here so that way this doesn't look like it's a PR stunt. You release the list of people that were there, and then you move forward with your life. Everybody ends up happy. The people that dislike Colin Kaepernick can then say, well, Colin Kaepernick had his opportunity. He just wasn't good enough to continue to play in the NFL. The people that like Colin Kaepernick and appreciate what he's standing for, or not standing for, rather, can then say, well, you know, he had a shot. At least the NFL did this for him. But because of the way that the NFL has gone about this, both sides are unhappy about it. Nobody ends up winning in this, and the only real loser in this situation is both Colin Kaepernick and the NFL. Nobody comes out of this better as a result.
Sometimes if I want to see if something is real or if it's just something the media talks about, I go to Las Vegas, or at least I check the lines. For example, when the Chiefs got off to a 9-0 start in the Dick Vermeil era. The lines got really, really big every single week, and clearly Vegas had bought into the Chiefs actually being a Super Bowl contender. So I wanted to see if they had any odds for Colin Kaepernick actually coming back and being a quarterback in the NFL, because Vegas doesn't like to lose money. And the odds on Colin Kaepernick coming back this season, this year, right? There's six games left. The odds of Colin Kaepernick coming back and playing in the NFL this season are 7-1. Now, that's a bit of a long shot, but it's not crazy when you're talking about 7-1. And next year, they've got the odds at 4-1. So Vegas doesn't necessarily think he's coming back, but they're saying there's a chance, which is the first time in a couple of years that I actually believe there was a chance of Kaepernick to play in the NFL.
Yeah, it certainly feels like there's a chance, but I just think that this is more PR than anything else. All right, let's go to the second part of our cover two here. Let's go to the college football playoff, because I think we are going to get some clarity this Saturday in terms of what the college football playoff is going to be. Earlier this week, they released the updated standings, the updated rankings for the college football playoff, and it's basically the SEC, the Big Ten, and then everybody else. Right now at the top, you've got LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama as your top five teams. And Sean, I think the game of the week this weekend is one that is going to have all of us wondering moving forward how many SEC teams there will be in the college football playoff. It's Georgia taking on Auburn at Auburn. Georgia's a 2.5-point road favorite in this one. If Georgia wins this weekend, I think it will confirm that we are going to get two SEC teams in once again. It will be Georgia and then either LSU or Bama, depending on what happens in the SEC championship game. If LSU beats Georgia, I think LSU and Georgia make it. If Georgia beats LSU, I think there's a pretty good shot that it's Georgia and Alabama ultimately that make it in.
I think that's pretty much a foregone conclusion at this point, BK. There's going to be two teams from the SEC, and we've seen that a lot. And unfortunately, oftentimes, that's been at the expense of the Big 12. The Big 12's done. I mean, we can end that conversation right now. Even if Baylor ends up beating Oklahoma on Saturday and running the table, and they go 12-0 and they win the Big 12 championship game, is anybody really going to make an argument at that point that Baylor's better than a one-loss Georgia team or a one-loss Alabama team or even like a one-loss Oregon team? I don't think that's going to happen. So the Big 12's done. You can eliminate them, which means the SEC, that gives them more likelihood of being able to have two teams in. Right now, as usual, they've got six of the top 12 teams. You're talking about the LSUs and Georgias and Alabamas and all these different teams, Florida and Auburn, rounding out the six teams right now in the top 12 from the SEC. I think no matter what happens, no matter what shakeup there is, it's going to be two of the following three teams, LSU, Georgia, and Alabama. And I don't know who exactly it's going to be. I can tell you almost for certain the other two teams are going to be Ohio State and Clemson. Clemson's the one that I feel best about. Like, they're already 10-0. They don't play anybody tough. They don't play anybody in their conference championship game. Clemson is going to be one of those Final Four teams. I feel pretty good about Ohio State, too. And Ohio State has a couple of tough games left. Playing in the Big Ten championship is certainly not a foregone conclusion. But I feel pretty good about those two teams making it, BK, and then two out of the following three, LSU, Georgia, and Bama. That's going to be your Final Four.
I will be interested in seeing what the response is from the public if we once again get two SEC teams in the college football playoffs. I thought this was interesting. This comes from Emmanuel Acho. He was on ESPN earlier today talking about how he's been force-fed the SEC for years now.
They should become the first two-loss team to make it into the college football playoff.
They would be the most deserving two-loss team to make it in Greeny, but absolutely not. And the problem is people try to force-feed the SEC like you force-feed a kid vegetables. It's just you don't do it when you don't need to do it, Greeny. Here's the thing. There are too many one-loss teams that are deserving. You have Oklahoma's. You have potentially Baylor's, assuming they take a loss, etc. Fact of the matter is, Auburn has two losses. So even if they do go on to beat Alabama, go on to beat Georgia, they still lost to LSU. They still have losses on their resume.
I think that's going to be a common refrain from people.
Auburn's at 12. They'd have to leapfrog a bunch of teams to get there. Now, they do have a chance in theory. They do play some of the big boys.
Yeah, and that would be the argument for them, right, is the schedule. Like, the schedule is so good that it is difficult to not have two losses on that slate. But for people that are not SEC honks, seeing LSU plus Georgia or plus Alabama or plus Auburn is just going to feel like more of the same. And I think in the end people are going to watch anyways, regardless of what happens moving forward. But that is one of the things that college football as a whole – stands to lose if you see another year of two SEC teams in the playoff.
I feel like, BK, we keep chipping away and chipping it away at an actual playoff. Because when you talk about four teams, is that a better system than it used to be back in the day when our dads watched football and they put number one versus number 12 and just said, oh, that team's now the national champion? Or is it better than it was a decade ago when computers told us who the best two teams were? No question about it. Like, they're working toward a better system. Is four the right number? I haven't really heard one person that says four is the right number. I've heard people say eight. I've heard people say 16. I've heard people go even bigger than that. I don't think you need to go bigger than that. I don't think it's the NCAA tournament. I don't think you're going to talk about all the upsets and people getting off work and all those things that the NCAA tournament has. Now, talking about the NCAA tournament, I think that's the most perfect postseason format of any sport at
in college basketball.
Yeah, I love how they do it. I think it's perfect. I love it.
In terms of crowning the best team as the champion, or in terms of the most fun for fans, because it is the worst way to crown a champion.
I'm with you.
It's terrible.
Because usually it's the hottest team that wins, not the best team that wins. That's happened to UConn like on three or four separate occasions.
Exactly.
But I do think it's the most entertaining. I think that it's fun that we take off that Thursday Friday and all day long the first weekend is games. And then like the way they do it and the feeling that it gives us, it's almost holiday, which brings us back to the college football playoff. Four should be expanded. And I think that this might be the year that you just simply do this. LSU, can they win a national championship? Yeah, of course. They're LSU. They just beat Alabama. They've got four top 10 wins. Ohio State, can they win a national championship? Yeah, duh. Clemson, can they win a national title? Sure. And then you start getting to teams 4, 5, and 6. And when you can't separate those teams, then you need to expand. And right now, you got Georgia 1, you got Alabama 8-1. Let's say that's how it stays, BK. And it stays LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4. Is anybody going to make the argument that Alabama, because they're number 5, isn't a good enough team to win the national championship? Of course they are. They got Nick Saban, they got Tua, they're freaking Alabama, and they wouldn't even get a chance just because of the format. So, to me, the number is pretty obvious. It's 8. If you make it any bigger, you start to let teams in that probably shouldn't be there. If you make it any smaller, it keeps teams like Alabama out. Expand it, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're actually having this conversation in a couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a while, I think, before we decide to actually expand it. But I think 8 is the right number. I think the way you do it is you do the 5 power conferences. The winner of each of those 5 conferences gets in automatically.
Everybody knows 8's the number.
And then after that, you just get 3 at-larges. And if one of the non-Power 5, one of the group of 5 teams gets into the top 10, let's say, they're automatically qualified. Now you've got 2 more spots left. And this year, those teams would obviously be, as of today, Alabama and Oregon. And that makes all the sense in the world. They're making it harder than it needs to be, but it will eventually go to 8 because there's more money to be made. And that's ultimately what they care about.
Benny Heiss stops by about a half hour from now, but coming up next, we take a trip inside the mind of the machine on The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
You can start firing up your fantasy football questions here in a little while. We'll get some fantasy advice with Benny Heiss coming up around 3:45. Coming up in about 15 minutes, BK thinks the tide is turning nationally on the Kansas City Chiefs. And Tyrann Mathieu said that Tyreek Hill is one of the 5 best players that he's ever played with. I'm going to take it a step further. I think you could argue that Tyreek Hill, if we're not talking about quarterbacks, is one of the 5 best offensive weapons in the entire NFL. We'll get into all that momentarily, but right now, let's step inside the mind of the machine. Thursday night football tonight, BK. Steelers at Browns. By the way, if Pittsburgh wins, they've got the same record as the Kansas City Chiefs. Who you got? Steelers at Browns.
Tonight, I'm going to go with the Browns.
Really?
I'm not ready to believe in the Steelers. Like, I'm willing to be late on a few teams. The Steelers are one of them. The 49ers are another. Everybody's telling me that I need to buy into the 49ers. And then I watched the 49ers against the Seahawks, and it was very clear that the 49ers had a quarterback problem. I'm not buying into that team. The Steelers, everybody's telling me how good their defense is, and I believe them. The defense is actually legitimately good. But their starting quarterback is still Mason Rudolph, and he can't throw to anybody. So I'm going to take the Steelers. By the way, there is a little bit of news in the NFL right now for the Browns. They have cut Antonio Callaway, their young receiver who has certainly had an up and down path in the NFL and had an up and down path in college as well. He will go on waivers. I would be surprised if somebody does not claim Antonio Callaway, but it will not be the Chiefs.
Do you expect Kareem Hunt to have a big game tonight against the aforementioned Steelers defense? He got a lot of opportunities. That's what I was surprised about. They gave him the ball three or four times. They threw it to him seven times in his first game back.
Yeah, I think they're looking for anything right now with that offense, right?
That's fair.
And Kareem Hunt had four carries in his first game back, and it was really the receiving game. And we know how good of a receiver he is. We saw that here in Kansas City. So I think it will be dialed back a little bit from that. I don't expect that he's going to have a huge game in this one. I think Nick Chubb will continue to carry the bulk of the load for them.
Chiefs in Mexico City on Monday night, BK. What's your favorite Mexican restaurant in Kansas City?
Ooh, Mexican restaurants. My favorite taco place is Tacos El Gallo down off of the boulevard. In terms of my favorite restaurant,
what's that weird taco place CDOT took us to with the weird cheese? Remember the powder cheese?
Oh, yeah.
In a tub.
Yeah, that was up north. That's not a real taco place, though. That's like a fast food restaurant.
That doesn't mean it's not a real taco place just because it has a drive-thru, BK.
Yeah, I mean, they're not known for tacos. Like, it's a place that makes like burgers and stuff. Like, they also happen to have tacos. I would say the best Mexican restaurant in Kansas City, I guess I'll go with Jalapenos. I'd say that's probably right up there.
Anywhere on the boulevard, the line is short. So if it's margaritas, if it's Ponax, if it's El Patron, whatever.
Ponax is the best for their margaritas. I don't know if Ponax is the best for food.
What's the better Mexican dessert, sopapillas or churros?
Oh, sopapillas. Absolutely. 100%.
Have you ever had fried ice cream?
I have. It's
That's
tremendous.
Actually, that is so good. There used to be a place called Annie Santa Fe by Oak Park Mall, and I grew up at that place. Well, I didn't grow up at that place. I grew up in my house, but we went there all the time, and my pops always got the fried ice cream for dessert.
It's fantastic.
What are the chances, BK, that the Texans can go into Baltimore and beat the Ravens and Lamar Jackson on Sunday?
You probably know this. What's the line on that game? Is it like Ravens by four?
It is.
Ish?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that's about right.
I think it's five.
I think the Ravens are the better overall football team. You always do your most complete team rankings, right?
Yeah.
Every Monday.
I got Baltimore at the very
Sunday.
Top. Mm-hmm.
I think the Ravens are a more complete team than the Texans. The thing is, the Texans' biggest weakness is their secondary, actually. And they've been trying to fix that all year long with busts of former first-round quarterbacks, just the way the Chiefs have tried fixing their linebacker problem with busts of former first-round linebackers. I don't think that Lamar Jackson's the guy that's going to be able to throw all over them. I know that sounds kind of blasphemous after he's been so good this year, but it's really his legs, not his arm. I might take the Texans in this one, actually.
You can take them.
Everybody else is zigging, I think I might zag.
Go ahead and zag. I'll take the Ravens, and I think this is the game that opens everybody's eyes. Not that they're closed by any stretch of the imagination to either one of these quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, but I think that this is the game where Lamar Jackson outplays Deshaun Watson, and people go, yeah, I'm taking Pat one. I might be taking Lamar Jackson right now ahead of Deshaun Watson, which heading into this season, I don't think anybody thought we'd have that
conversation. Do you think there's actually people that are saying that, though? Like,
I'm saying I've
heard people talk about the discussion, and I've seen all over SportsCenter how there's a lot of people that are saying, like, would you rather have Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson? I haven't seen anybody that's actually said they would take Lamar Jackson.
I'm telling you, I wouldn't. I've got one reason. The only reason
you take Lamar over Deshaun?
I would. And the only
moving forward?
Yes, I would. And the only reason that I want it, the only reason that I would even hesitate is because Lamar Jackson is a pretty skinny guy that runs all the time. And in the history of the NFL, those things aren't a good combination. At some point, that guy breaks in two. And if that happens, then the whole experiment's over. Besides that, like, if you told me that both guys were going to remain healthy, yeah, I'll take Lamar Jackson over Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson's just so much better as a thrower. Like, just so much better as a thrower.
And Deshaun Watson's so much better as a runner. I mean, so much better. He might be the best running back in football, and he plays quarterback. Or the flip phone, BK. You ever have a flip phone?
I did, yeah.
The flip phone is officially back today with the re-release of the Moto Razr. What's your favorite phone that you've ever owned? Do you ever own a Sidekick?
I did not. I had a lot of friends that had the Sidekick.
Sidekick is where
it's at. I did not have one.
What was the first iPhone you got?
I mean, like the one? What was it at the point at that time, right? Like, I don't even remember what they were called. Honestly, the Razr might be up there. The Razr might be up there in terms of my favorite phones that I've ever had. I remember that. You remember the T9 texting we had like the actual keyboard on our phones because of the front screen?
PK, let me take you back to a day where we had something called pagers where you had to put 911 at the end if it was an emergency, which it never really was. And there were certain numbers that you'd put in. You could probably figure it out if you were trying to hook up with a girl or if your parents. Like, there was a lot of different things that you'd get away with the beeper that really opened up
a young Sean Levine. A
14-year-old sports machine's horizons. Speaking of horizons and elevations, you want to try a little bit of trivia here real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, what's the, within 1,000 feet, what's the elevation of Mexico City?
Oh, I know it's really high, like 10,000? No, like people view Denver as like this crazy elevation. I know that this is significantly higher than Denver, so let's go 10,000?
It's higher. It's 7,382 feet.
Okay.
What's the highest mountain, BK, in the world?
Kilimanjaro?
No, that would be Mount Everest, but Mount Kilimanjaro is really fun to say. And approximately, BK,
Mount Everest still is? I thought it was passed.
I just checked this morning. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Approximately, how high do planes fly? We'll give you plus minus of 5,000 feet.
Cruising altitude is, you said 5,000 feet?
No, I said you get a plus minus of 5,000. Give me your guess.
Okay. I believe cruising altitude's 20, right?
35,000 is the average flight. Is how high they fly. Oh, I got one more for you, Kramer. You can jump in on this one. CM Punk, your boy CM Punk, is back in the WWE. I know that's your thing. My thing is the UFC. CM Punk tried at the UFC. It didn't work out. And he did what Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar and now Cain Velasquez have done before, where you fail at real fighting and you go back to fake fighting. Am I wrong, Kramer?
You're not wrong. I mean, it's fun to see CM Punk back, though.
But you know that he's really not that tough of a dude. Like, can you be entertained watching him wrestle next time, knowing that he got his ass kicked two times?
How many rounds can you go with him?
A half of one. I think I got a minute and a half in the UFC with CM Punk. Like, I'm no tough guy, but CM Punk looked bad when it came to the UFC. Coming up on the other side, Benny Heist joins the show, so feel free to text us at 69306 with any fantasy advice you want me to throw at Benny Heist. And BK says the tide is turning nationally on the Chiefs. I disagree, and I'll tell you why on The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Welcome back into The Drive. We're about 15 minutes away, but from being graced with the presence of one Ben Heisler, which means we're going to get some fantasy advice with Heist, presented by Response Genius. That's coming up about 15 minutes from now, so feel free to fire up your text on the Protein House Eat with a Purpose text line at 69306.
Before we get to Tyreek Hill, I want to pass along this news. This comes from John Heyman of CBS Sports. He says, Royals, with new owner coming in, have a very limited budget this fall. With just a few million dollars to spend, they hope to bring back Alex Gordon and add a pitcher or two, likely in the bullpen. This is not what I was hoping for. If you're a Royals fan and you were hoping that with the new ownership would come a new budget, and with a new budget would come a little bit more likelihood of
wins.
Just likelihood of the team adding significant pieces to the roster for next season. This certainly does not appear, and it's only one report just by John Heyman. Maybe this is ultimately going to be something that is debunked moving forward, but man, that is a disappointing report to hear. So if you missed it, Royals, with new owner coming in, have a very limited budget. With just a few million dollars to spend, they hope to bring back Gordon and add a pitcher or two. There's a lot of guys that I like in this market that I think could really help them that wouldn't cost a ton. But if this is their budget and they're not going to add much, then we should expect more of the same next year. Again, that report comes from John Heyman here on The Drive.
What happened to this guy having loose purse strings and being a billionaire and be willing to spend money and a Kansas City guy and a baseball first guy? And maybe that'll all happen, but we'll see. What did you say about Alex Gordon? I wasn't paying attention.
Said that the Royals would like to bring him back, but because they only have a few million dollars, they would like to bring him back, but it sounds like it would be on a lesser deal, obviously, than what they had previously.
That's probably the end of the Royals conversation for today. We get back into the Kansas City Chiefs, where Tyrann Mathieu said that he thinks that Tyreek Hill is a top five player that he's ever played with. And then you think about it, and Tyrann Mathieu's played with, Hall of Famers like Patrick Peterson, J.J. Watt, really good players like Deshaun Watson, a guy named Patrick Mahomes. So when Tyrann Mathieu says that you're a top five player that he's ever played with, that's an awful lot of credit. And then I really thought about it, BK, and I was like, are there 5 better offensive non-quarterbacks in the NFL than Tyreek Hill? My answer is, I don't think so. You know I love a good list. I came up with one. Here's my top 5 best non-quarterback offensive players in the NFL, and tell me why I'm wrong. Christian McCaffrey, number 1, because he's a dual threat, and he can pretty much do everything you want an offensive player to. Ezekiel Elliott, the back-to-back rushing champion, and he still looks really good. Dalvin Cook, I think, is a dual threat running back who might be playing better than anybody at that position this year. And I'll put Saquon Barkley at number 4. I can't come up with another running back, tight end, or wide receiver outside of those 4 guys that I would rather have when it comes to an offensive weapon than a healthy Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I would put Tyreek Hill above quite a few of these. Christian McCaffrey, I can totally understand being number 1, but I'd have Tyreek above Saquon, above Cook, above Zeke. I think the other guy that I would have above quite a few of those players is Michael Thomas. I think what we've seen from Michael Thomas this year is that it is a tier of the top wide receivers in the NFL. I think it's Tyreek Hill and it's Michael Thomas, and then you drop to the next tier with whoever else you want to have in there. You want to throw in Julio? Fine. That's perfectly fine. You want to throw in Devontae Adams? I'm perfectly fine with that. Any other wide receiver that you want to throw into the mix, they go into that second tier for me right now. But Tyreek Hill and Michael Thomas are right up at the top. I would have them, I think, on that top tier with Christian McCaffrey. And then in terms of offensive weapons, I think there's a tier break after them, and then you get into the Ezekiel Elliott's, the Dalvin Cooks, the Saquon Barkley's of the world.
So we generally agree how good Tyreek Hill is. That
I would just put him higher.
When you start ranking non-quarterbacks in the NFL and you talk about the best offensive players, I've got him right around 5. It sounds like you've got him as high as number 2 or number 3. I've got no problem with that.
I think you can argue 1. Like, I think there's a strong argument that Tyreek Hill is actually the best offensive weapon in the NFL that doesn't play quarterback.
Yeah, I think if I went that far, people will start to call me a homer and tell me I got my red shades on. Like, as good as I think he is, and I love me some Tyreek Hill, and he's a great weapon, and when he's healthy, he's impossible to stop, and I do think he's the best wide receiver.
That a homer take?
To say that he's, because I just don't think that he's a better offensive threat. Like, if you're talking about all the stuff, Christian McCaffrey. And if you want to say he's 2nd or 3rd, I'm cool with that. I think Christian McCaffrey, based on what he's done this year, is clearly the best offensive player in football.
I don't agree with that. First of all, I certainly don't think it's a homer take. I think in terms of explosiveness, there is nobody more explosive in the NFL than Tyreek Hill. And the plays that he makes, like Christian McCaffrey can't make them. There are obviously plays that Christian McCaffrey makes that Tyreek Hill doesn't have the opportunity to do so, but I think Tyreek Hill's skill set is the most unique in all of
it. And here's another reason why I might say that, PK, and only have him like 4th or 5th. And when I say that, that's got him 4th or 5th, which means he's better than everybody else in the league. So I'm waxing poetic as much as I can. I think that on the Chiefs, if you're talking about who's the 2nd most important player behind Patrick Mahomes, we've seen the way that this year has played out. There's an argument to be made for Eric Fisher. I know that's crazy. I know he plays left tackle. I get it. But think about how Pat has been rushed and bent into a pretzel and missed time because of the offensive line. And think about the struggles of the running game this year and the lack of holes that's been created. Eric Fisher does both of those things. So it's funny to say that at the same time, we both agree Tyreek Hill is one of the 5 best non-quarterback offensive weapons in football. I also think he might only be the 3rd most important player on the Chiefs.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Just because, like, even still, despite the fact that they're without Eric Fisher right now, and this is again, kind of going back to the conversation we just had, we're disagreeing on semantics here, because wherever you want to have him, I think it's a top 3 right now on the offense, of Mahomes being a clear-cut number 1, and then for me, Tyreek Hill would be number 2, and number 3 would be Eric Fisher. So we're right in that same argument. I just saw how much the offense changed without Tyreek Hill. How teams were able to play this press man coverage. They were able to run the ball, and then the Chiefs couldn't get off of the man coverage, and the offense struggled, and the defense wasn't able to stop the run. You can't do that when Tyreek Hill's out there. They completely changed the way that they play the Chiefs as it pertains to the offense whenever Tyreek Hill's out there. That doesn't happen because of Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher ain't changing the way the defenses are playing this team. Chiefs are still able to put up points without Eric Fisher out there. It's just a difference in terms of the effectiveness of the offense as a whole. I think Tyreek Hill changes things more.
I actually thought the offense was going to look a little bit different and a little bit worse and struggle a little bit more than it did with Tyreek Hill out. I mean, they put up a 40 spot on Jacksonville. They put up 28 in the 2nd quarter versus the Raiders. They outscored Baltimore. We all know what happened in the Lions game. I thought they actually did a pretty good job of masking when Tyreek Hill was out. Now, a lot of that...
Do you remember that time, though? We were talking about how the formula had been set. That was when Tyreek Hill was out. The formula has been set. This is how you beat the Chiefs. It happened in the Lions game, and then it continued happening thereafter for a few weeks. And that was because of Tyreek Hill not being in the lineup. That's not the case anymore.
No, and a lot of it was because guys stepped up in his absence. Now, it wasn't one guy, but there was the game that Sammy Watkins had where he had 200 yards and three touchdowns. There was a game that DeMarcus Robinson had where he was huge. There was the game that my guy Mecole Hardman had. So when he was out, guys stepped up in his absence, which is not what I can say Cam Irving has done in the absence of Eric Fisher. That's Kramer. That's BK on the Sports Machine. Coming up about 5 minutes from now, Benny Heist joins the party. So feel free to text us your fantasy questions, little fantasy advice with Benny Heist coming up about 5 minutes from now. So I understand that locally there's a little bit of hesitation, a little bit of worriness, if that's a word, when you're talking about our feelings for where this Chiefs team is right now, and that if they lose coming up on Monday Night Football, the sky is going to be falling, panic's going to be setting in, and at that point, I think it probably should. You'll be 6-5, the Raiders will be ahead of you in the standings, you'll have 13 days to talk about your woes, the Chargers will have control of their own destiny, so if you lose coming up on Monday, there's going to be a lot of issues, but BK, you think the tide is already turning on the Chiefs nationally.
I do. I heard this earlier today from Colin Cowherd, and I think it was symbolic of the way that a lot of people feel about this team.
1-7 in your 8 biggest games. Yes, you blow out bad teams. Yes, you're unbeaten in September. Yes, you can throw the ball and not look. I get it. I need you to win more games against TV games. You know, we always roll our eyes at Kirk Cousins. And we all know Mahomes is better than Kirk Cousins, but you got to start winning those Sunday games and the Thursday games and the standalone games and the pressure games. You got to start winning those games. Kansas City doesn't win those enough, and so they're out of my Super Bowl bubble.
Colin Cowherd said that the Chiefs are not one of the teams any longer that can win the Super Bowl, in his opinion. And I think there's a lot of people that have kind of jumped onto that bandwagon. If you just listen to any sort of national talk show over the last few days, there's a good chance that you heard something to the effect of, the Kansas City Chiefs' run defense stinks. The Kansas City Chiefs have not been able to keep up what we all expected that they would be offensively. The Chiefs are in trouble. They are no longer a team that's going to be fighting for a 1 or 2 seed. Now they're a team that's going to be fighting to make the playoffs and win their own division. I think nationally, there was a disconnect with certain people locally in terms of how good this team is and what the potential is for them moving forward if they reach that peak.
We agree, BK, that New England's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And New Orleans, mm-hmm. And San Francisco, mm-hmm. And Baltimore.
I think San Francisco's a little overrated, but yeah.
And Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Those are the only teams right now, and I know Las Vegas isn't always right, but those are the only teams right now that the desert things have a better chance than the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. So as ugly as it's been, as sloppy as things have gotten, with all the injuries, all the Andy Reid not calling the right play, the missed clock management, the missed field goals, the missed snaps, all the issues that have happened with this team, Las Vegas isn't jumping ship. Now, the Chiefs started this season at 5-1, basically co-favorites to win the Super Bowl with the Patriots, and now they're down to 10-1. That makes sense. Las Vegas doesn't believe in the Chiefs the same way they did at the beginning of the season. But as I mentioned, the only teams that they think have a better chance to win the Super Bowl, even the way this season has gone so far, New England, New Orleans, San Francisco, Baltimore, and Green Bay. So what that tells me is, Vegas thinks that when the Chiefs get right, they're as dangerous as the team that we made them out to be at the beginning of the season. Now let's see if they can get right. Because the one frustration that I have talking about the injuries, and I think that's the number one reason. I don't think it's fun to talk about, but I think it's the number one reason why the Chiefs are 6-4 and not 9-1 or 8-2. But last week versus Tennessee, they had Pat back, and he looked like the MV Pat. And they had Sammy Watkins out there, and they had Tyreek Hill, and they had Travis Kelce, and they had the running backs, not named LeSean McCoy because he was in street clothes. So on the offensive side of the ball, the only guys that they really didn't have last week versus Tennessee were Eric Fisher was in street clothes, standing there with LeSean McCoy. So you had most of
LDT
your arsenal.
And they're starting right tackle too. But yeah,
you had most of your arsenal, at least when it comes to the skill position players. Like, you're right. You're right. It was still a patchwork offensive line.
Three-fifths of the offensive line was out.
It was still a patchwork offensive line. But you still had enough weapons. And the Chiefs still went out there and lost. And I'm not going to pin that on the offense because they put up 32 points. And I thought Patrick Mahomes put up one of his best games. But it's just kind of scary to think, BK, that here we are entering, what, week 11 of the season. And I remember as we entered the season, the one thing that I said I think has to change the most, the defense doesn't have to be great. Defense doesn't even have to be good. They just can't be the reason why you eventually don't win a Super Bowl. And last year, I think you can point to a specific game or a specific unit and say, that's what cost them. It was the secondary. It was the overtime versus the Patriots. That's what cost them. And I think we're at the same point right now with different issues where you could still say the defense could cost them a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I'm not looking at them that way anymore. I came into the season and I said my only expectation for the defense, and I'm going to be consistent with this. I expect them to be average. I expect them to be slightly below average, be 20th best in the league.
Is this what you expect? Like, as they
this
currently
is what the 20th
are?
Best defense in the league looks
so
like.
So you're cool with this?
I mean, I would prefer that they would be better, but we said coming into the year, what's the expectation for the defense? How good do they need to be? The expectation was 20th. They've been exactly 20th so far this year. Like, this is what we all wanted. We just didn't really know in terms of what it actually looks like, what it would look like. And this is what a 20th ranked defense looks like. They're pretty good against the pass. They're pretty bad against the run. And overall, it comes out in a wash and it's slightly below average. So if this is what the defense is, and it is, we have no reason to believe that it's going to change because the pieces didn't change. It's the offense that I'm going to judge more strongly moving forward. I said this at the trade deadline. That was my biggest takeaway. When Brett Veach didn't make a move to help improve the defense, I had no reason to believe that the defense was going to suddenly miraculously get better. And so my judgment will now turn from, can the defense get from 20th to 15th, to can the offense go from 4th to 1st? And that's where I'm going to be putting my attention moving forward. And that's why I'm going to say on Sunday, one of the biggest issues that they had was not the run defense. Like, the run defense was obviously terrible, but the issue they had was that they fumbled and it led to 7 points directly for the Titans. The issue was that they had 6 different drives that stalled out and resulted in field goal attempts instead of touchdowns. That's what needs to get corrected. I'd like to see the defense get corrected, but I know the offense can get corrected. So that's where I'm going to put all of my efforts.
Did you own the first Eminem CD?
I'm sure I did.
There was the song, remember, the Real Slim Shady, will the Real Slim Shady please stand up? That's what I want to ask Frank Clark. Will the real Frank Clark please stand up? And I wish I knew the answer. Frank Clark was the guy that I've seen in a Chiefs uniform on the field, not very productive for 6 or 7 games, then behind a microphone after that, giving out some excuses, but not being the culture changer that I thought that he was going to be. Or is Frank Clark the guy that everybody told us was worth $20 million, worth the draft picks, worth letting Dee Ford walk, worth saying bye-bye to Justin Houston? Because, BK, if he is that guy, and pardon me for being negative, I'm not sure if he is that guy, but people tell me he still can be that guy, and part of the reason he hasn't been is because he's been hurt. So let's just go with that. If he can become that guy by sitting him out for a couple of weeks, hell, I don't mind if you rest him the rest of the year until the playoffs roll around, then we're putting a lot in the Frank Clark basket. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the guy. That's the impact changer. That's what we talked about. They didn't make a move at the deadline. You said you had no faith in them. That's the move. If they can get that version of Frank Clark back at any point during the season, especially before the playoffs, that's the move to get him over the top. I just don't know if Frank Clark's actually that guy.
I think he is. He's just hurt. And so now with him being hurt, and I don't have any reason, I don't know this to be true, but I don't have any reason to believe that them sitting him out a few weeks is going to ultimately fix a pinched nerve. I think this is just something that he's going to have to deal with until the offseason. And so when you have that situation, and you also have 2 defensive ends right now, and Emmanuel Ogba and Alex Okafor that are out, I don't think this is a time when you can sit Frank Clark. We just said at the beginning of our show, as our open, now is the time when their backs are against the wall. So you need all of your players to step up in a big way, and that includes Frank Clark, and I don't think that that means that he's going to be able to sit out.
Fire up your questions now. Time for a little fantasy advice with Benny Heiss. Benny Heiss presented by Response Genius. Visit ResponseGenius.com and improve your organization's email, digital, and direct marketing results. What's up, Benny Heiss?
Gentlemen, hello. What's going on?
Hello.
Hello. Good to be here, as always.
It's good to see you, brother. So I got a couple of questions for you about the Chiefs, about some fantasy football. But first, I want to know, who would you take in the matchup of Lamar Jackson versus Deshaun Watson if you're a fantasy
it's
football
player?
It's
going to be so much fun this week just to be able to see those two quarterbacks, and that's sort of been that big daily fantasy conversation. If I'm playing in tournaments, normally, like, if you're playing in cash games, you want to try and find, okay, who's that cheap quarterback that I can go ahead and run with? Who's going to be my Mason Rudolph or my Kyle Allen this week? But if you're talking about guys at the top tier, I'm probably going Lamar Jackson this week. I think it's an easier matchup for him. He's at home, which I think is a benefit to him. They had that big win at home against New England. So I think if he can go up and be dominant against the Patriots defense, there's no reason that he can't be dominant against Houston's defense as well. So my slight edge is to Lamar, but he's also a lot more expensive if you're playing on the daily sites. But I still think the high floor for him is going to be always a little bit tad bit higher than Watson, but they both have that same exact super high ceiling where one of them can probably win you a slate.
Let's get in the Chiefs game. Feel free to text us at 69306 with any fantasy advice you would like me to ask Benny Heiss. BK is pointing this out to me. I kind of went, huh? Phillip Rivers is leading the league in passing yards right now? That kind of went right above my head. How good of a play is he on Monday night versus the Chiefs?
He's a fine play. I'm trying to figure out what that game is going to look like. We're seeing right now what the total is around 52, 52.5. I kind of get the feeling, you guys can tell me whether or not you think I'm nuts on this, that it's going to be a very high-scoring, back-and-forth, high-octane first half. And all of a sudden, these guys in the second half are going to start to catch their breath a little bit because of that altitude in Mexico City. Like, they know that on a dominant level, Mahomes can be able to torch a lot of these guys in the San Diego. How many times have you guys done that over the course of this week?
I'm actually not that bad. I think two.
Okay. I was going to say, if you set the over-under on like 1.5, it'd probably be somewhere in that area. The Chargers secondary, with the exception of Casey Hayward, has not been particularly good this year. And again, you just have so much speed. With Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins is averaging about 9 targets in his last 3 games. Hasn't done a whole heck of a lot with it, but I just imagine just the back and forth, and Mike Williams and Keenan Allen's always had a lot of success against the Chiefs. Like, it's just going to be a high-octane, high-tempo offensive game in the first half. Like, it'll probably be like 24-17 in the first half. Like, I really believe that. And then I think things are going to start to slow down. The Chargers have been incorporating Melvin Gordon much better in the last 3 weeks. Last 3 weeks, he looks like old Melvin Gordon again. And he's only averaging about 4 yards per carry. And you might say, that's not particularly good. That's Melvin Gordon over the course of his career. Like, Melvin Gordon has not been a good yards per carry guy, but where he's good is in the passing game, where he's good is finding his way into the red zone for touchdowns. He gets a ton of touchdowns on a year-end basis. So that's when I think things are going to start to slow down. We'll see whether or not Damian Williams is up for the challenge on the other side, because, you know, the Chargers are going to be able to be effective running the football.
I would assume that Melvin Gordon's one of the best running backs on the board against the Chiefs, right?
Absolutely, yeah. But I think Austin Ekeler is certainly in play. They found creative ways to continue to keep him involved. He's not going to get the amount of carries that maybe we're used to seeing, but Phillip Rivers trusts him. He's going to use him out in the slot. He's going to use him on the outside. They're going to move him around. I think he's got about 2-3 receiving touchdowns in his last 4 or 5 games. He's still a valuable weapon for them, and he's so athletic and so good after the catch that really I would consider both of those running backs to be in play.
You mentioned Damian Williams. He's one of the guys that we've talked about a lot this year between him and LeSean McCoy. What do you do with him on Monday night? Is he actually, in your opinion, firmly implanted in this number one role, or do you think this is going to go back to being a timeshare?
I think he's in the number one role because the last 2 weeks, every indication for Damian Williams, BK, is an indication that they're starting to use him in the way that he was used last year. He set a season high last week as far as rushing attempts went. I think 19 total. They incorporate him 5 times with 5 targets in the passing game. I think he caught all 5 targets. He's the guy, and I think they're starting to see him look like what they saw from him last year. Now, from an efficiency level last year, he was dominant in the back end of the season. And so I think now with McCoy coming back, whether or not the rest was really, I don't necessarily buy that from Andy Reid, but you know, maybe he's telling the truth. I don't know. He'll still get some carries. He'll still get some volume. We'll see what happens with the rest of the running back tree there. But I think they want Damian Williams to be the guy. That's sort of what they envisioned at the beginning of the season. When Andy Reid says, Damian Williams is our starter. Now, they brought in LeSean McCoy. They gave him the $4 million guaranteed, and it was a nice backup option. And we weren't sure what the ultimate situation was going to look like. But I still think it's Damian Williams' job to lose at this point, because all the numbers over the last few weeks would indicate that he has the firm lock on it.
So I'm a real football fan before a fantasy football fan. I've watched a lot of Sammy Watkins.
You can be both.
No way.
Yes.
And I've watched a lot of Sammy
real
Watkins.
Real football fantasy,
and in
yes.
real life, whatever the hell his name is, Benny Heiss, he really frustrates me. Is there a more frustrating fantasy football player also than Sammy Watkins? You pointed out he's been targeted a ton the last few weeks, but the numbers just don't match up.
I'm trying to think of guys that it's just – how about David Johnson this year?
Yeah.
David Johnson has been super frustrating. Robbie Anderson with the New York Jets has been another guy that's
– Evan Ingram in and out of the lineup,
yes.
But for different reasons.
All right, Evan Ingram certainly a part of that conversation as well. All 3 touchdowns for Sammy Watkins all came in game number one, right? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden he's getting plenty of targets. That's why I think – and maybe you can throw Leonard Fournette into this conversation as well. He has the second most number of snaps of any running back in fantasy and yet has 1 touchdown on the year. I think he has 40 red zone rushing attempts, one rushing touchdown. But you have to look at it from a long-term perspective, too. Like, at some point, the positive regression is going to come for a lot of these guys. At some point, Leonard Fournette is going to turn those opportunities into touchdowns. And I would imagine it's the same thing with Sammy Watkins. If Tyreek Hill continues to just burn teams left and right, and I heard you guys part of the conversation earlier of not only being a top five player that Tyrann Mathieu has ever played with, but you know, if he's in the argument of one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, if not the best, I still think there's a couple guys I'd probably rank ahead of him. And we can have this conversation another day if you want. But at some point, you got to double team him, triple team him, bracket coverage him. And that's why Sammy Watkins is getting a bunch of targets. Mahomes realizes that he's open. They just need to find him a way into the end zone to be able to be successful.
Getting fantasy advice with our guy Benny Heiss. It is presented by Response Genius. Visit ResponseGenius.com and improve your organization's email, digital, and direct marketing results. Let's look at tonight's game really quick, Heiss, because it's an interesting one from a fantasy perspective. On the Steelers end, it sounds like James Conner is going to be back for this one, and that obviously takes Jalen Samuels out of a lot of people's lineups. And then on the Browns side of things, we weren't sure what the Kareem Hunt role would be. It seemed like last week he basically just replaced Hilliard's role, and he was the guy that was getting all the passing down work. Yep. How do you rank those guys, Connor and Kareem Hunt, and then obviously Nick Chubb as well, when it comes to your running back rankings?
I'll go James Connor one, particularly because of how Mike Tomlin uses his running backs. When they have a starting running back, that is the bell cow back. That is the guy that's going to get upwards of 20 to 25 rushing attempts, probably get 4 to 6 targets in the passing game. So because there's nobody else eating into the workload, and because the Steelers' defense is playing at a higher level than the Browns' defense right now, I'll rank James Conner number one. Even coming back from injury, he hasn't missed any practice in the short-term week. I think he'll be fine. Then I have Nick Chubb number two. 4 consecutive weeks of 20-plus carries. The snap count is still high for him. They're still giving him volume, even though Kareem Hunt, I think was 38 out of 70 snaps. I'd have to double check that. But Nick Chubb is continuing to get a bunch of volume, continuing to be consistent, really good between the tackles, averaging a high yards per carry number. So he's going to get volume in that offense against a tough Pittsburgh defense. And then Kareem Hunt, probably number three, not targeted 9 times in the passing game last week. So he's going to have a role. And the thing is, and I think I might've talked to you guys about this last week, if you have Nick Chubb on your fantasy team, I don't know how in the world you haven't considered making sure that you have Kareem Hunt locked and loaded as a trade candidate, as a free agent pickup. That might be the most valuable handcuff that you might have, maybe with the exception of Alexander Mattison with the Minnesota Vikings for Dalvin Cook, or Latavius Murray for Alvin Kamara. You've already saw that come into play. For 2 weeks, Latavius Murray was awesome. Over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns in 2 games. You have to have the handcuff for Nick Chubb because he has a history of being hurt constantly. So Kareem Hunt could win you a fantasy league if you don't pick him up.
I'll run through some of your questions on the other side. We got Benny Heiss getting fantasy advice with Benny Heiss, as always, presented by Response Genius. Visit ResponseGenius.com and improve your organization's email, digital, and direct marketing results. On the other side, I'll get to a couple of your fantasy questions and the best news that came from Sunday versus Tennessee. There wasn't a lot of good news. The best news was that might be the best that Patrick Mahomes has ever looked. We'll talk about that, his health, and other things coming up next on The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports
Radio. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.